Okay, Laura, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. And I think we also have, I don't know if we have any public comments, you know, listening in on the call but not able to speak, but we might. So let's just keep that in mind, of course, this is an open meeting. If you don't mind, Laura, I'm thinking we could do roll call first, just so we kind of get that out of the way, to do the commissioner roll call, and we'll do a CPW staff roll call to make just so everyone knows who's on the line.
All right. Adam?
Just a reminder if you're, Laura, just a reminder if you're on mute, to unmute when your name's called. Okay, sorry, Laura, go ahead.
Okay, Adam? Absent. Leska?
Here.
Ray?
Here.
Garcia?
Here.
Haskett?
Here.
Hauser?
Present.
McDaniel?
Present.
Schaefer?
Present.
Vardy?
Present.
Vigil?
Here.
We have Chair Zimmerman?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, so we have Dan Gibbs? We have Kate Greenberg? Okay, should I continue with staff and...
Yeah, that'd be great. You go with your staff. Yeah.
Okay. I know we have Jake Matter. Do you have Lisa Reynolds? Brett Ackerman?
Present.
We have Corey Chick. Do we have Reed DeWalt?
Present.
I know we have Heather Dugan. Mark Leslie?
I'm here.
Dan Prentzel?
Here.
J.T. Romaski?
Down here.
I know we have Justin Rutter. Lauren Truitt?
Here.
And we have Jeff Versteeg. We have Krista Heiner, Katie Venter, Jonathan Boydston. Do we have Amanda Nims?
Here.
We have Danielle Eisenhart. Do we have Bridget Kopel?
Present.
Rebecca Farrell?
I'm here as well.
Kim Rogers?
Present.
Randy Hampton?
Present.
Travis Duncan?
Present.
Travis Long?
Present.
Jim Gammonly?
Yes, I'm here.
Jennifer Anderson?
Present.
Joe Lewandowski? Jason Clay? Is there any staff that I missed?
This is Bill Vogler. I'm here. Okay. Brian Dreher is on.
Thank you, Brian.
Chair Watts and Game Families and Commercial Parks.
Thank you.
Julie Stiver's office.
I got Julie Stiver. I missed the other one. Sorry.
Chris Breidenbach with DAG's office.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Tyler Cozy, DWM out of Salida.
Okay, thank you.
Mike Reduce.
And Mike, thank you. Okay.
Okay, great.
We have a quorum.
Perfect. Thank you, Laura. Thanks, everyone, for being on this call. I know it is non-traditional, much like everything we're doing these days. I hope everyone is staying healthy and staying sane as much as possible, and I really appreciate your time today. So just a reminder, the purpose of the call, So the reason we're talking today is to address some of these emergency regulatory matters. Emergency might not be the right word, but pressing regulatory matters that were originally on the March 18th, 19th agenda. And Laura, just let me know if my connection, I have to use Wi-Fi calling, so if my connection gets at all fuzzy, please interrupt me and let me know, and I will try to move closer to my router. Tangent. But this is call is to take matters that were on the March 18, 19 agenda that can't wait until May. So these are things that need to be addressed prior to the end of this month. So the other thing I want to mention, and I think this is great, Krista Heiner, thank you so much for you and your team for putting this together on your download, on commission download, which is a separate download from what was on the March download. There is a document called Recommendations for March 30. Actually, I don't know if that's the name of the document. Item 9. This is a confidential privilege only for CCW Commission, but if you scroll through it, it gives you an idea of what we're talking about today, what we'll be talking about at the end of April, and then how we're going to try to manage May. It's a very, the last three pages is a crosswalk that's put together that lines up all of the items from the March agenda and when and how we're dealing with them. So if you get a chance, take a look at that. Once we get through our agenda today, we can talk through some of those items as well as other pressing issues after we get through some of these emergency regs. And then the only other thing I'd ask is, you know, if you want to quote unquote, raise your hand, I guess the best thing is to just, you know, stop me or when you feel there's a pause, just say, hey, this is Commissioner so-and-so or this is, you know, whoever you are. And then we'll acknowledge that way. It'll be a little wonky, but we'll make it work. So I'm going to jump into the agenda. Are there any, I don't think I've heard any changes to the agenda that went out. This is going to be the agenda for Monday, March 30th, starting at 2 p.m. There's also two pages of consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes or anything to pull from consent? Give you a few seconds to take a look and let me know.
If not, this is Marvin McDaniel, and I've moved to approve the consent agenda.
I think we have that later. Yeah, we have that at item 8. So let's hold, and thanks, Marvin. Let's hold until then, just in case someone, you know, who isn't on the call yet or something like that, jumps in and wants to pull something.
Okie doke.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. Let's open up for director's comments. Director Winslow.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep mine brief probably till the end, but I appreciate some commissioners make the call today, obviously. I appreciate not just Jeff, all the leadership team, but Jeff Versteeg and specifically and his staff, Laura, who's worked very hard to try and just pull this off. Lots of questions about how we can do this, which ones we're going to do. Obviously, we're in the emergency making mode here. It's a little weird for me. For the first time ever, I think in our 125-year history, the director has more authority than the commission. And I laugh about that in jest, but it's true only because we didn't really see that coming. We asked the governor for power to extend licensing passes from his executive order, and we just lifted it so I could do that in for lack of a better term, absentia. I'm sure Jake or Chris or Lisa will tell me I'm getting my words wrong. But so the language is that the DNR and the division director could extend licenses and passes for 30 days due to health and safety, and didn't think about putting the commission in. So don't read into that. We're still going to do this as a joint group, but ultimately you still have the regulatory authority, but I have the authority to extend passes. So wanted to just make sure we're all on the same page. We want to get through this agenda. We will talk about some things on the back end. I'll give you a quick update on the back. Just make sure we get through business on where we're at, draw, where we're at on licenses, campgrounds, state parks. I'll give you a quick update there at the end. So with that, I just wanted to, you said, say thanks for your time. Sorry we had to cancel March. We tried to do everything we could to pull it off, but it had to be 100% online at the time, and we'd already noticed the hot mic in Aurora. So all old news, but we'll continue to endeavor. And again, thanks to staff that pulled this off. So with that, I'll end the finishing later.
Okay, great. Thanks. And I just got a note from Laura that Wayne East is also on the call, but is muted. So thanks for joining, Wayne. We can move on to Jonathan Boydston to review public comment. I know we've had plenty. So, Jonathan, thank you for doing the work here to summarize.
Sure. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Chair Zimmerman, Craig Clenzel, and Jonathan Boydston, Policy and Planning Assistant. Typically, for commission meetings, I organize the written public comment received via the commission's email inbox for review prior to the meeting. For this meeting, however, I wanted to give a brief oral update on the public comment submitted since the last summary you received. With that said, there has not been any public comment related directly to the emergency regulations being considered today. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about the comments that have been received. But again, we have not received any comments regarding the specific regulations being discussed today. The next written report of public comments will be sent to you in the typical format prior to your next meeting, and will include the comments received since your last written report. But again, there hasn't been any new comments received related to the regulations being considered today. Thanks, and again, please let me know if there are any questions that I can help to answer about the public comments that have been received to date.
I do have a couple questions, but other commissioners, go ahead first, please. Okay. Jonathan, the only question I really had was clarifying, because for the April 30th meeting, that is going to be noticed, and we're going to try to figure out how to take public comment. Maybe this is a question for Laura and her team, but curious how, I think we're going to talk about this, but just wanting to make sure I understood how we're going to handle public comment that just wants to go on a public comment record versus public comment that people want to be read into the record as if they were there in person for that April or even the May meeting, if it's virtual, and if they're not able to comment in real time. I know you haven't been talking about this, so I don't know if you can speak to that.
I can speak to the sort of the time frame for the public comments that we received via email. I know that we will have reports for that late April meeting, and there is a comment deadline of April 27th. At noon for that mailing, and then a separate time frame for the comments. We will send additional comments that are received for the early May meeting as well, but perhaps Laura or somebody else can speak to the logistics for delivering those comments that people may want to be read out loud at the meeting.
This is Laura. We haven't actually got that far into the functionality to see exactly what we're doing or how we'll handle it. But that's probably one of the next things on the list. We're working on getting through this one first, and then we'll see what technology is able to let us do.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, just keep us posted and just ask. We make sure we communicate to the public how they can just differentiate between just making comments and go on the record or wanting to make a read on the hot mic, so to speak, comment.
Sure, thank you.
Great. Jonathan, thank you so much. If any other commissioners have questions or comments, please just speak up. Okay, so let's jump into agenda item 4, emergency regulations. Krista Heiner, what I'd like to do here, and commissioners, let me know your feedback here, but what I'd like to do is there's three of these regulations that we need to take action on. And if we could have the discussion after each one, but wait until we've gone through all three, and then we can just have a motion and a second to approve all three at once. It'll be a roll call vote. I think it's going to be more clear than trying to approve each one, unless anyone has any concerns with that.
Sounds good.
Okay, great. Krista, floor is yours.
Great. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director Frenslow. I'm Krista Heiner, Regulations Manager. Again, please stop me if you can't hear me, and I will, you know, try to shift around as well. So today we're addressing emergency regulations. So we'll start with Agenda Item 4, just Chapter W2, Big Game. This is yellow in color in your mail.
Krista, sorry to stop you. Just wanted to remind the public listening that Krista Heiner is our regulations manager.
Yep. Okay, so sorry about that. Yep, this is Krista Heiner, regulations manager, and we're on Agenda Item 4, Chapter W-2, Big Game, which is yellow in color, I believe, in the mailing. It's open for consideration for emergency regulations necessary to change the Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep quota for the 2020 rifle season in S9 from 10 to 8 for residents and from 0 to 2 for non-residents. You can find these specific changes on page 2 of the yellow document. In January 2020, you may remember the Commission adopted rules to implement the 2020 Bighorn sheep license numbers. Subsequent to the adoption of the 2020 Bighorn sheep license numbers, the division identified an error that required administrative cleanup. So the correction has been made in these regulations. These changes in no way alter the overall intent of the Big Game season structure as previously approved by the Parks and Wildlife Commission or the Big Game season regulations adopted by the Commission in January of 2020. These regulations were scheduled to be considered at the March 2020 meeting, and absent the consideration of these regulations today, the division would be unable to run the Bighorn Sheep Limited License drawing. So it's important that we make these changes prior to the drawing, which is scheduled to be conducted on April 23rd. So that is it for Agenda Item 14. I'll take any questions.
Any discussion or questions, Commissioners? Okay, thanks, Krista. Let's go to Item 5.
Okay, great. Agenda Item 5 is Chapter W-5, Small Game and Migratory Birds. Small Game Migratory Birds. This is blue in color. It's open for consideration of emergency regulations related to waterfowl and migratory bird hunting seasons, including season dates and bag and possession limits, as well as expanding the current youth waterfowl days to permit waterfowl hunting by veterans and active military members. So these regulations reflect the upcoming 2020 to 2021 migratory bird season and are the result of an annual review of the entire chapter related to migratory birds. Regulations are consistent with federal guidelines provided by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. In addition, on page 4 of the blue document, you'll notice the description of the San Luis Valley Goose Zone to include portions of Archuleta and San Juan counties east of the Continental Divide. Due to historical oversight, there were small portions of Archuleta and San Juan counties east of the Continental Divide that were not previously included within this zone. Then on pages 6 and 7 of the blue document, you'll notice that these regulations also expand the current youth waterfowl days to permit waterfowl hunting by veterans and active duty military members. As you'll remember, we discussed in January, there are new federal regulations which allow states to have up to 2 additional days to allocate to veterans and members of the armed forces on active duty, including members of the National Guard and Reserves on active duty other than training. So to provide this extra opportunity to veterans and active duty military while minimizing the impact on the length of the regular waterfowl seasons, the existing youth waterfowl hunting weekends have been modified to also allow hunting by veterans and active military personnel on the same days. All these changes were scheduled to be considered at the March 2020 Parks and Wildlife meeting, but that was canceled, as you all know. So absent these emergency rules, the division would be unable to certify its 2020 to 2021 migratory bird seasons with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by its April 30th deadline. So that is why we need these emergency regulations. And I believe that is it for agenda item six or five. I'll take any questions.
Okay. I'm looking to Commissioner Garcia and McDaniel, right?
Yeah. Commissioner Garcia, hello. So we spoke yesterday, Krista, and was there anything that came out of our discussion yesterday, any changes?
No, no changes. We verified all the dates are correct.
Okay.
And Jim Gammonly is also on the call today in case you have any specific questions for him, but all the dates are correct. Yeah.
Okay. No, just wanted to make sure that we got everything that I covered with you yesterday. And thank you for taking the time to call me yesterday to go through this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for double-checking.
Hi, Krista. This is Commissioner McDaniel. Could you give me a little history about why we still have a separation between Central Flyway Northeast and Central Flyway Southeast, in the date setting? In the Northeast, we have a separated season. In the Southeast, it starts about 2 weeks later and runs continuously for the period. Has there been any thought about making Northeast like Southeast? This goes back to my discussion with the commission about a year ago about the changing migratory patterns and the time that, ducks and geese come through the state.
Thank you, Commissioner McDaniel. I believe I might have to defer to my colleague, Jim Gammonly, on this one. Jim, are you available to answer that question?
Sure, I can try. Thanks, commissioners and Director Prenslow. I'm Jim Gammonly, the Avian Research Leader for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And your question, Commissioner McDaniel, is a long-standing one. We've looked at how to divide up the duck seasons in the Eastern Plains for many years. One of our long-standing issues has been that in the southeast part of the state, duck hunters typically want to hunt as late as possible, and there's less duck hunting activity early in the season, whereas in the northeast part of the state, there's interest and opportunity and activity by hunters throughout the season. There's a fair bit of early season opportunity, especially on state wildlife areas along the South Platte River. And we've done a number of public surveys over the years to try and identify the best way to set up zones and season dates within those zones. And what we've arrived at over the last decade or so is to have separate zones in the southeast and the northeast. And in the southeast, we basically just start as late as the federal frameworks allow and back up the season from that last state. And in the northeast, because of there is interest from the public in early season hunting, we have a short period early in the season, or a portion of the season early in the season where we start earlier. We have a split in the season, and then we run the season as late as we can to provide late season hunting opportunity in the Northeast.
Thanks, Jim. This is Commissioner McDaniel again. When was the last time we did this survey? Can you tell me?
The last time we changed zones, in fact, we did before, I think, 2011, we had one combined Eastern Plains zone, like you're talking about. And we would consistently, year after year, hear from a few people that didn't like what we did with that Eastern Plains zone is we had a split season. Since most of our duck hunting activity in the Eastern Plains is actually in the northeast part of the state, we heard a lot from hunters who wanted to hunt early in the season. So we had a Eastern Plains zone for the entire Eastern Plains that looked very similar to the northeast zone season that we have now. We did public surveys. We took a random sample of HIP registrants that hunted ducks throughout the state and focused on the Eastern Plains. And we asked specifically, you know, in the Southeast and in the Northeast when people wanted to hunt. And we also asked about the possibility of creating two zones in the Eastern Plains. We got pretty strong support from the respondents who lived and hunted in the southeast part of the state, and kind of lukewarm. Since there wouldn't be much change in the northeast in the season, there wasn't a strong response from hunters up there. But based on that, in 2011, we enacted the zones that we have now, and we've had them since then.
Thanks, Jim. Commissioner Gandigan, thanks for the history. It's very helpful. Very helpful also with regards to the feedback you've received from the public. I think, you know, having been in Eastern Plains quite a bit, waterfowl hunting over the years, I think things might be changing. I wouldn't suggest we change it this year, but I would ask that we continue to poll the sportsmen about that with regards to migratory patterns, because I've seen quite a difference and I've received quite a bit of feedback about that as well from folks in the state with regards to the difference in terms of, you know, number of waterfowl during our available seasons that we put out. So, but thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim, this is Jeff. You want to mention briefly the public meeting that we had at Shields a couple of years ago?
That was Jeff Versteeg and I think Jim again, right?
That was a question for Jim Gammonly. If he's off the call already, then maybe Mark can talk about it. Marvin, we held a public meeting at that new Shields store a couple of years ago right after they opened. On this very topic, and the room was pretty well filled, and like so many of these meetings and surveys that we get of waterfowl hunters on the Eastern Plains, the room was pretty divided. There were those that wanted to hunt early, there were those that wanted to hunt late, or some in the middle kind of weren't sure, and at the end of the public meeting, everybody agreed they're going to go out of there with what we have. Nobody was happy, but there wasn't enough consensus to change anything, and that's kind of how this issue seems to be going for us. But we'll keep working on this and try and get a conversation started at the very beginning of the process in this next cycle.
Well, I appreciate that, Jeff. That's a good saying, you know, usually when two sides that are negotiating over something both aren't happy, that means it's usually a pretty good deal.
Well, this is the textbook version of that.
And Commissioner McDaniel, this is Jim Gammonly again. Can I add something real quickly?
Sure.
So that meeting was focused on when to have the split in the duck season in the northeast zone. It wasn't a specific discussion about, you know, zones in the Eastern Plains or anything like that. But we do hear, and I hear every year from hunters who are that, you know, at least have the perception that ducks are migrating later in the fall than they used to. And our harvest data doesn't really bear that out to this point. We get the annual harvest data from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service every year, and we've been looking at that. We're still harvesting a lot of ducks early in the season. There does seem to be some indication that maybe mallards are starting to more consistently migrate south a little bit later. And I just wanted to mention that there's a new effort. There's been several efforts to try and analyze data across the country to see whether we can actually detect that there's a substantial change in migration patterns of ducks. There's a new effort that's about to start up that the Mississippi and Central Flyways will be involved in to again look at available data to try and get a better idea of what's going on with migration patterns right now. So everybody's paying attention to this issue, and we'll keep paying attention to it in Colorado as we get new information, I'll be happy to update you and the rest of the commission on that.
I appreciate that, Jim. Yeah, I've seen similar literature inquiries about that, specifically among states in the South and what they've seen, and of course, the difference in migratory patterns that they're concerned about. So thank you for looking into that.
And Commissioner McDaniel, this is Commissioner Garcia. You have to remember that there are some of us that are over 30 years old that still love those bluebird hunting days in early, in the middle of October on the northern park. So don't take that away from us.
What's the fun of hunting in swarms, Charles?
Commissioner McDaniel, this is Mark Leslie, Northeast Region Manager, and we'll get you out on a ride along. And Commissioner Garcia as well as Commissioner Blessing, if you guys want to go out and work some of those ponds early duck season this year.
Love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Great. All right, Kristen, let's move on to agenda item six.
All right, sounds good. Agenda item six is chapter W0, general provisions. This is green in color in your mail. This is an open configuration of emergency regulations necessary to temporarily authorize the use of a temporary authorization number, or TAN, as proof of privilege for most of the division's products. For up to 45 days, and to issue an apprentice hunter certificate twice, and to temporarily make hunter education classes available completely online. So let's break that down a little bit. Let's start with the TAN changes on page one of the green document. So a TAN, or temporary authorization number, was previously, has been provided for all of our telephone or internet sales, license sales, or pass sales, except for licenses with carcass tags. This number allows the license or pass holder to exercise the benefits of that license or pass prior to receiving or picking up the physical license or pass, but not to exceed 14 days from the date of purchase. However, on Monday, March 23rd, Aspira, CPW's licensing vendor, started experiencing significant delays in the fulfillment of CPW products due to the shelter-in-place orders related to the COVID-19 situation. This created a significant backlog in printing and mailing licenses, passes, and other CPW products. These emergency regulations would therefore allow for the use of a TAN, or proof of privilege, for most of the division's products in order to address the lengthy delays and possible closure of the Aspira fulfillment centers. This includes small game licenses, combination small game and fishing licenses, waterfowl stamps, habitat stamps, annual state park passes, and OHV permits. These emergency restrictions also extend the time frame for which a TAN is valid from 14 days to 45 days. Additionally, for the 2020 spring season only, a TAN will be allowed for proof of privilege for over-the-counter spring turkey licenses and April mountain lion licenses, which have a carcass tag. So the regulation was modified to remove the carcass tag language to allow CPW the flexibility to use TAN for certain species with carcass tags. And in that, those situations only, a printed copy of the receipt or confirmation email will be used as the carcass tag. So after these emergency rules, customers who do not receive a physical license in the mail after 14 days will not be able to use the TAN as proof of privilege for these products. And customers who do not receive a physical 2020 over-the-counter spring turkey license or 2020 April mountain lion license in the mail would not be able to use TAN as a proof of privilege and a printed copy of the receipt with the carcass tag. Then on page 5, you will see changes related to the apprentice hunter education certificate, and also making hunter education classes available completely online. Again, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the division's in-person hunter education courses have been suspended through May 11th. We permit apprentice hunters who have not yet completed the division's hunter education course to be able to do so prior to the big game limited license drawing application deadline on April 7th. Regulation number 002N4 has been modified to allow the division to issue an apprentice certificate twice. The dates of the apprentice certificate have also been modified to correspond to the new 13-month time period for annual licenses, so from March 1st to March 31st. Additionally, regulation number 002N3E has been added to temporarily allow the division to offer its hunter education course completely online. This course will be approved by International Hunter Education Association standards and hosted by a third-party vendor already in place. So absent these emergency rules, the division would be unable to offer its hunter education courses until May 11th, and many novice and apprentice hunters would be unable to apply for the big game limited license drawing. And that is all I have for agenda item number 6. Happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Krista. And I think one thing, just a reminder, and we'll talk about this again, these are emergency regulations. They're being made because we need to do this now, but they are only good for 120 days until we, as a commission, can decide what we want to, you know, which ones we want to ratify and approve after we, at the late April call, after we've had a chance to fully know everything. So, Krista, my question, I think, is this one. Do we think that having, like, the Hunter Ed being able to be 100% online, does the division see this as something that will go forever, or do you think we'll go back to needing an in-person course when time allows?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I believe the intent of this was to just have it be a temporary change for the having the Hunter Ed course offered 100% online. But I'll defer to my colleague, Travis Long. Travis, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, sure. This is Travis Long, Hunter Education Coordinator. The value of the online presentation or delivery is for it to be 120 days and only 120 days as of now. This will help us meet the needs. This 3-week period leading up to the application deadline is our busiest 3 weeks of the year. And so we had about 1,500 students signed up for courses, and there were still plenty of spots left. So I'm assuming we would have been closer to between 2,000 and 2,500 students we would have certified in this 3-week period. So the thought was with the online presentation is that it will help us offset this kind of delayed rush that we're going to get later in the summer when we don't normally have as many classes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments from commissioners?
This is Commissioner Garcia. I'm curious, I'm looking at, got an email from Director Prinsloo, March 27th, and with the governor's powers, there's a lot of these things that he's able to do without coming to us. And I was curious, one is, so we're talking about people being able now to get this PAN, which I got one. And what about the person who has a fishing license who on March 31st is technically challenged, unable to somehow go online, is used to going into a store, getting his or her new license? Have we done anything to extend those fishing licenses for 30 days, like we have OHV and things like that?
Thank you, Commissioner Garcia. I might have to defer to my colleague, Danielle Eisenhart, for questions related to licensing. Danielle, are you on the line?
Hey, I'm Krista. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Danielle Eisenhart, License Pass and Reservation Section Manager. So for those customers, Commissioner Garcia, we're urging that they can call into either our call center or Spirit's call center, and they can give the customer the TAN number over the phone.
Okay. Okay. No, that's great. I just know that we have always had that problem, not just at CPW, but everywhere, that you have people that just, for one reason or another, just don't seem to work well with computers. And so I know we've extended some of the licenses. So I guess my final question on this is, this is only 45 days. I guess that gets us through until we meet again in April. But the governor ordered how much does that give? I'm hoping it gives enough that the director can do a lot of this without having to come back to us. Is that fair, or is this one that's just outside of the order?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Garcia. This is Krista Hanger again. Oh, sorry. Director, was I interrupting you?
Yeah, go ahead and, this is Director Brenzel. Go ahead and answer, and then I'll have some added it, please.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, so this emergency regulation deals specifically with the use of the TAN number, as you mentioned.
Right.
So extending that for 45 days, whereas the executive order deals with the expiration date of passes and OHG registration. And I believe there is some flexibility with what the director can do in that regard. But Director Prenzel, go ahead and add anything you'd like in that.
Thank you both. Thanks for the question, Commissioner Garcia. So executive order, we asked for 90 days, but the governor can only do 30 days and then can be extended for that. That's one part of your question. The second part of the question, we did have, we asked for permission to do any all passes certificates, and we had a lot of back and forth trying to get that executive order out. And so I can't sit here actually today and tell you a chapter and verse on which one it entails. But with that being said, we did talk about fishing licenses specifically in small game, but because of the qualifying license issue, that we figured most of those were going to get resolved through the qualifying license, especially as a resident issue. And so before April 7th, we did choose not to extend April 7th because it's completely online. And last but not least, which I'll talk about in the end, but I believe I sent the commission all a letter when we physically closed the front doors, but at each one of our visitor center offices and regional offices, which I'll do again, but I'm going to put a shout out to our customer service people, that we are there and the call center ready, willing, and able to help people on the phone, and we'll still let people through the door if they have a special need on those kind of things, because there are a few people that don't have computers, et cetera. And so we're still trying to handle those as an as-needed basis. I thought that would just be helpful background.
Great. Thank you, Director. Thank you, Danielle.
Okay. Any other comments, questions for Krista on item 6?
This is Marie. I will make a motion to approve all the temporary regulations.
Commissioner Vigil, second.
Great. Laura, I think we do need to do a roll call.
Okay. Wanted to double check. Is Adam on the call? I'm sorry. Did I hear a yes or? Okay. Adam is absent. Fletcher?
Yes.
Ray? Yes. Garcia?
Yes.
Haskett?
Yes.
Hauser?
Yes.
McDaniel?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Vigil?
Yes.
Zimmerman?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Great. And Krista, I want to say thank you again to you and to AD's office and to you, Laura, and all of the scrambling I know that you guys had to put together to identify which regulations were truly emergency and required this action and putting all this together. So just wanted to say thank you again, and we will move on to agenda item 7.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Amanda Mims, are you on the call?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Zimmerman, Commissioners, and Director Kunzlow for this opportunity to present to you the Director's recommendations for the Colorado Wildlife Habitat Program 2020 RFP. My name is Amanda Mims, and I am CPW Protection Specialist and the Program Manager for the RFP. This program is, of course, CPW's landowner program that provides funding for landowners who wish to conserve their wildlife habitat and provide public access to their land for hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing. And we secure this habitat conservation and public access through the special real estate transaction using conservation easements, public access easements, and on rare occasions, fee title acquisition, which is when CPW purchased the property outright. The director this year is recommending a program that mirrors 2019's program, including a budget of up to $11 million, which comes from our partnership with GOCO and revenue generated by the sale of the habitat stamp. And this year's funding priorities include public access for hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing, big game winter range and migration corridors, protecting habitat for species of concern, riparian areas and wetlands, landscape scale size parcels, and parcels that provide connectivity to other conserved lands. Funding preferences include third-party conservation easements, increased public access, greater donated values, conservation easements that support wildlife crossings, and easement acquisition is preferable to fee title acquisition. The evaluation process includes proposal review by both staff and the Habitat Stamp Committee, each looking at the project through their own lens. For example, amongst other things, staff look at the strategic conservation impact, biological significance, and habitat quality, while the Habitat Stamp Committee looks at each project through the lens of our legislative mandate. If the public access is being offered, if big game winter range and migration corridors are being secured, if the project preserves diversity of wildlife, et cetera. And then after the staff and Habitat Stamp Committee rank and prioritize the project, the SHIP team will then consider all the proposals from a statewide perspective and provide first recommendations to the commission in September. After that, real estate and water staff will inform the leadership team of potential transactional concerns, and then the commission receives the director's final funding recommendations in November. Because of today's conference call, and thank you for including the RFP on the agenda, we are only about 2 weeks behind the original schedule. We're proposing the deadline for application submissions to be Monday, May 18th. This provides applicants a little over a month to pull together an application, which was the same amount of time they had in 2019, and we received 20 good applications last year. It's likely application materials will be put up on CPW's website before April 15th, providing a little extra time to applicants since the public info team is ready for our updated materials depending on today's commission vote. Then after final funding recommendations are made by the commission in November, negotiations with successful applicants will begin in January 2021. I would be happy to answer any questions before you take a vote on the director's 2020 recommendations.
Thank you, Amanda. This is great. Can you remind me again, I know we go through this every March, and typically our priorities are pretty similar. Every now and again we get director or staff will recommend something to be added to the priority list that's unique. And that said, I have two questions. I'm wondering what the difference is between a funding priority and a recommended preference. And then given the executive order from the governor on movement corridors for wildlife, is there any, you know, the fact that conservation easements that support wildlife crossings is in here is great. Do we need to be moving that as a preference to a priority, or preferences and priorities kind of the same thing?
That's a good question. So the priorities basically come from our statute, specifically our mandate to provide public access and protect species of concern, big game and winter range, and migration corridors. That's straight from statute. Preferences include what else we would like to see funded. And the need to see things like working farms and ranches and wildlife crossings. I think it could be discussed and certainly adopted if the commission directors saw fit to move up the wildlife crossings to be a priority. It would, right now, both priorities and preferences have their own scoring criteria in our matrices.
which are used as guidance to help prioritize projects. So a little bit of maneuvering might have to happen with the scoring should wildlife crossings be moved to a priority rather than a preference. But as it is now, they are still recognized with points if the projects include wildlife crossings. If that helps.
That does. Thank you. That makes sense. Okay, any other questions, comments from commissioners? Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
Unless any other commissioners, you know, disagree, I don't think we need to move wildlife crossings from preference to priority. It sounds like priority is really direct from statute. So unless, you know, Amanda, you or your staff or director recommends that, or other commissioners, I don't need to see that done. I just wanted to understand the distinction between the two.
Thank you. I think that would be up to Director Prenzlow.
Yeah, I think I don't hear anyone else chiming in saying, yeah, we've got to make this stuff priority. I think, you know, as long as it's a part of the board matrix, you know, I think we're certainly in compliance, if you will, with the executive order from the governor.
Yes.
Okay, I think these look good. Also, the other thing last year, I know one of the commissioner questions was with regard to outreach and how we released the RFP and how people are made aware of the RFP and how they're encouraged to apply. And I think you did a great job last year talking to that and informing everyone how people are made aware of this and how local staff work so hard with our landowners and partners. If there's any other questions about that, community commissioners, let Amanda know or be on the call or separately. Okay. Great. Well, if there's no other discussion, I will entertain a motion to approve agenda items 7, the Colorado Wildlife Habitat Program priorities for 2020 RFP.
So moved, Commissioner Schaefer.
Second, Commissioner Garcia.
Great. Sounds like we got Schaefer and Garcia. I think we can actually, a voice vote might be confusing. Let's go ahead and do roll call.
All right. Commissioner Adams is absent. Lecca?
Yes.
Ray?
Yes.
Not sure if I missed that. Maybe right, Ray?
Yes.
Got it. Thank you. Garcia?
Yes.
Haskett?
Yes.
Hauser?
Yes.
McDaniel?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Vardy?
Yes.
Vigil?
Yes.
Chair Zimmerman?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Amanda.
Good enough. Thank you so much. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
So onto the consent agenda. I asked earlier, I don't know if anyone joined that wasn't on earlier that had any questions or concerns with the consent agenda. Speak now.
We're ready for Marvin.
All right, Commissioner McDaniel.
So move.
Second, Commissioner Garcia.
Daniel Garcia. Let's try a voice over, see how it goes. Everyone in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, great.
Motion carries unanimously.
Pretty well. Thanks, Laura. Okay, agenda item 9. I think this is where discussion and of what we're going to be doing, sort of the go-forward strategy is on deck. So if everyone has this crosswalk that is item 9 in the packet that Krista put together, and the first few pages as well talk a lot about what we just did on this meeting, and then what we'll need to do, why we have to have an April 30th meeting, and what we need to have. So what we're going to try to do for April 30th, we already talked about, is to make sure that we can somehow get, well, first we need to adopt all the permanent emergency regulations that we talked about today, because we'll have had a chance to notice it, and then we can adopt them as permanent. The other reason that we need to have the call on April 30th is that a lot of the remaining items from the March meeting, we probably want to cover, otherwise they would carry forward to the May meeting, which already has a lot of significant items on the agenda. So we want to try to cover as many of those March holdovers as we can, so we don't end up needing more time in the May meeting. So I'm just going to go through some of the things that staff recommends that we discuss on April 30th, and then we can stop and talk about that, and then we can go over some of the things that we're recommending to have in May instead. And again, commissioners or staff, stop me, you know, step in and stop me as needed. What we're looking to do April 30th is going to be Chapter W-2, which is just going to be administrative cleanup. This is for regulatory items. That's administrative cleanup, including the adding of the annual senior small game fishing combination license as a qualifying license. So we already talked about this. We gave kind of our approval blessing for the change, but staff needs us to actually adopt this regulatory change so that it's crystal clear. We'll be doing that. Chapter W-9 and any related provisions of Chapter E-1, changes to wildlife properties and regulations, properties regulation. The Juanita Watchable Wildlife Area regulations that were originally supposed to go into effect June 1st, but given COVID and the situation, there's no rush on the regulations for that property. So a June 30th effective date will suffice. We'll take care of that. Chapter P7, modifying the special activities permit regulations, and then Chapter W0, creating senior license and fishing add-on license. Any questions about any of those staff recommendations of regulatory items to be discussed in April?
No, this is Commissioner Garcia. Chair, I'm just curious. I'm looking back at what was our agenda for our March meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And are we going to be trying to cover most, if not everything, that we would have covered in that meeting? Is that fair, or there's some things I think we're going to be talking about. There's some we're going to be talking about, but some we covered today,
we'll still be bumping a few things to May, a handful. I think, 3 to 5 items we'll still need to bump to May. But we'll try to get 7 or 8, I think, maybe even 10 to 12 items covered on the April 30th call.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if it's much work, but to the extent that we can cross-reference these back to the March meeting, I did that, for instance, with the consent agenda. As I was preparing, I went back and looked at all of the stuff that we did. Waterfowl is a good example. I went back to see what we did in the January meeting and then looked at what we were supposed to do in the March meeting. And so to the extent, if it's a time-consuming, tedious task that doesn't need to be done, then don't do it. But if it could be done, it would save me. Of course, I've got all the time in the world, so I guess I could do it.
If you open agenda item 9, the hyperlink there on the agenda.
Okay.
If you open that, it opens the document, and if you scroll down to page 5, there's the March Commission meeting agenda item.
Okay. Got it.
And then it kind of goes across and says, okay, this one we dealt with in March, this one we're dealing with in April, and then these we're dealing with in May. I don't think, it certainly doesn't have every single agenda item.
Right, it just has the 3. Yeah. Okay, yeah, something like that is really helpful. But again, it's not necessary.
Yeah, and I've been kind of following this pretty closely. So I'll take a look, Commissioner Garcia, at the March agenda and see what items are not in this class. and just make sure we're not missing anything. I'll take that action item.
Okay. Thank you.
Making a note. Okay. Any other questions, comments on, and the way we're looking to do this is likely in April, staff will be recommending that all of these April 30th meetings, these regulatory items, be placed on the consent agenda, as well as the task of adopting a permitting emergency regulations today. So that'll likely be in the consent agenda. So just kind of setting you up for seeing what's coming in the April 30 call. And again, just trying to keep these calls as efficient as possible because I know attention span on a call is very different than even a video call or in person.
Commissioner Garcia, I would ask that if any commissioner has something that they feel needs to be pulled off the consent agenda, that perhaps they contact staff and discuss the matter and not save it for the April 30th phone call in hopes that I won't have to take it off the consent agenda if they can resolve the issue by phone.
Sure, yeah, I always encourage any time a commissioner, I know whenever I have a question or concern, I contact that staff person or ask Dan who the right staff person is and try to get it resolved. So, good recommendation. Someone else have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Schaefer. Just for the April 30th meeting, I was wondering if this is for Director Prinzel probably and others, if it would be possible to get any update of any preliminary sort of statistics related to the draw and what, where it's sitting. I think that for some of us, at least, that's one of the things that's kind of sticking out in our head.
So thank you, Commissioner Schaefer. We'll be glad to do that. I'll make sure that we list that on the thing, and I'll actually be sending you some interim data on that here pretty soon. Don't ever say ever because we have extra days in April, but I'll get you some of that detail.
Thank you.
Okay, so one of the other things we want to talk about on April 30th, and goes back to what Commissioner Garcia was saying, is that are we actually making sure that everything that was on the agenda in March is somehow getting covered? The wildlife contest, of course, was a big agenda item. We've given it a lot of time for March. And what we'd like to do, of course, staff is trying to make sure that April 30th can be a Zoom conference or some way that public can be involved or a little more than just a conference call where they're on mute. We're working on the best way to do that, but we're hopefully going to have a Zoom conference there. But what we'd like to do is see if we can provide the opportunity for the commission on April 30th to review the staff recommendation and the citizen petition related to wildlife contest. And then like I mentioned, if for some reason we can't have public, so we would hear both the staff recommendations, we would also hear from the petitioner. So the petitioner, if it were Zoom, we would see that petitioner presenting or maybe see their PowerPoint. If it's a conference call to be like it is today, we'll hear them presenting. They may have a PowerPoint or not. Either way, what we're going to ask for is that the public who wants their comments read, like normally how they would fill out a blue slip, that they provide those written comments to the commission's email ahead of time, before the hearing date. And that way that gives us adequate time to make sure that the comments are incorporated. But this is all just a process, so we'll see how that comes together. We do need to make sure that the petitioner is given the opportunity to present a petition orally. So I am talking with Joanna Hamburger and Alma Royal to make sure that that is what they want to do. Out of the March meeting, when we thought we were just going to go virtual with the March meeting and still hold it instead of cancel it, they were perfectly fine with presenting either a Zoom conference or a conference call. So I assume that will still be the case. So we have options for the wildlife contest. Because we kind of have two things saying the same thing to speak, with mild differences there, we have the option to take action on the citizen petition and or the staff recommendation on April 30th. So one approach might be the commission could approve the staff recommendation and deny the citizen petition. Or another approach might be we could hear the petition and the staff recommendation on April, direct staff to put whatever outcome is preferred on the May consent agenda. So let's say, for example, we hear the staff recommendation, the citizen petition. We say, okay, staff, we want to move forward with your recommendation. We're going to deny the petition at this point, so we don't hear it again in May, and that could just go on a consent agenda in May. We've heard a lot of public comment on this already in January. We received a lot of public comment over email. So I think we've had a pretty considerable comment. We know what the public feelings are on this. So I just wanted to kind of talk through that and see if anyone had any feedback or thoughts, including about that contest discussion in April.
This is Commissioner Garcia. Are you suggesting that we could possibly recommend the division's or approve the division's recommendation and ask that it be put on the consent calendar today and put on the consent calendar for April 30th?
No, I'm sorry.
Is that one of the options?
Okay,
I want to make sure. Go ahead.
It would be going on a consent agenda in May. We hear it in April. Okay. It would be going on a consent agenda in May.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure that the first option wasn't that we could do something today.
Oh, good catch.
Not today.
This is Commissioner McDaniel. Pardon me, this is Commissioner McDaniel. Thanks for the recap. I agree with you. I mean, we received a lot of public feedback, and certainly on this issue, I think the commissioners are well informed. I could support either taking action at the April meeting, or at the very least hearing it at the April meeting and placing it on the consent agenda for the May meeting so that we can bring resolution to the petitioners as quickly as possible with regards to their request of the agency.
Any other, just to make sure I understood, we would hear both the staff recommendation and the petitioner in April, virtually?
Yes.
Okay. Madam, unless you think there's something we can do today, and I don't think there is. We know what the staff recommendation is, and so we have that before us already. You said it. So there's nothing we can do today. I agree with Commissioner McDaniels. I suggest that we do whatever is necessary to hear what we can hear on April 30th and go forward. And if our recommendation is to, at that time, to deny that petition, and I'm not saying it would be, but if it was, and to move forward with the staff recommendation on the consent agenda in May, I think that might be a preferable solution. And I agree with Commissioner McDaniels that we should leave room in May for our next citizen's petition.
Fair enough. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going next anyway. Director Penslow, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Director Penslow. I appreciate that. That's helpful for myself and staff to plan for that. We'll work through that. I would also say, but make no guarantees. For the April meeting, because we've had public comments at one in-person meeting and lots of written comments prior to the March Commission meeting, and we'll have ample opportunity for written comments before the April 30th meeting, we legally are fine about taking public comment, but we also, and don't hold me to this because you're talking to the least adept at Zoom and internet, et cetera. We've got great people working on that, but we are not discounting the ability for some discussion, not just on Lilac Contest, but some public discussion maybe at the April call-in, but we're going to just play that by ear. So, we'd like to overshoot and undershoot, so don't hold me to it, but I want to say that we're continuing to look at those options. Don't have to, but always a good idea for you to be able to hear if you can, so you can pull that off. So don't have to, and again, we'll see what we can pull off. If it looks like it's too destructive and or too technologically tough as we move through with, and there's some serious bandwidth issues on cell phones and phone calls anymore for so many people at home. So we'll play that by ear. It's just game time, but I appreciate the thoughts forward on this subject. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Director. Okay, so it sounds like we're okay with hearing wildlife contests in April. We'll make sure we work with the petitioner to make sure that works for them as well. And then, so that's what I heard for April, and obviously I'm on the agenda and getting things out for a mailing, so that will be coming quickly. And then jumping to May, just again, quickly going through what we see on the May meeting and how we see pulling some of the March makeup into May. I'm just going to run through this quickly and then take a look at that crosswalk and then we'll quickly talk about the forum. So the May Commission meeting currently scheduled May 6th and 7th, Grand Junction. Obviously, we'd love to have it in person. I don't see that happening, so we'll hopefully do a Zoom video conference if that's the case. We do want to look at emergency regulations for Chapter P1, and that's regarding Fisher's Peak. So these are needed. The changes need to be effective immediately after the meeting to have Fisher's Peak property ready for a June 10th soft opening. Whether or not that June 10th soft opening will happen remains to be seen, but the regulations, we can make those regulations whether that opening gets pushed out or not. So leaving Chapter P1 on that. Go ahead. Okay. And then we have a final stage action item on the final change is to be July 1st. This is for chapter that we'll want to talk about in May. And so this is for wildlife contests mortgage game season. So if the commission decides not to take action on these wildlife contests at the supplementary April meeting, we will need to talk about it in May. But I think we can already discuss. We'll take care of as much as we can in April, and then if we need to do a consent agenda or take an actual vote in May, we can do that. Sounds to me like we'll probably give more direction at the April 30 meeting. Beth and Dan, if you are hearing differently, let me know. And then a couple other things we want to hear in May that we didn't get a chance to in March. Chapter W2, quotas for deer, elk, pronghorn, bear, and moose. Chapter W9, the wildlife properties. This is the 200,000-acre addition to the public access program and the statewide regulatory changes on the non-wildlife use of state wildlife areas. We've talked about these things in the past, but we need to bring them forward regarding our, I think this is probably a two-step process. Maybe a three. Krista can help me there.
This is Commissioner Garcia. I would hope that we can get these ready on April 30th and have them on the consent agenda at a minimum on May, if not dispose of them in April. We have discussed these, and frankly, I'm not sure that there needs to be a lot of further discussion on particularly the wildlife properties, but others as well.
I hear that. I'll leave that to staff. Krista, if you want to take a look at that, let us know what we can and can't do there. If we can hear it in April or if it needs to be in May, I'll let you get back to us on that for Chapter
9. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, this is Krista, Regulations Manager. I'm happy to look into that a little further and see what we need to have and what we don't need to have, and I can get back to you all.
Great. Another thing we need to follow up on, step 2 of 3, is the citizen petition process changes. We've talked about that in the past. We did have step 1, so we need to go through, we had staff go back and kind of refine our citizen petition process. So we'll hear that in May. And then some issues that we need to hear in May that, again, are kind of holdovers, the Chapter P3, the River Outfitters registration fee, Chapter W9, the property-specific regulations for public access program addition, and Chapter W3, the possible fur bearer permit. So these are all step one of two. I think we do need to hear these in May. Again, I'll leave it to staff and Krista. If you guys think that you want to move any of these to April, just let us know. Keep it posted. I'll defer to how you guys want to fit that puzzle. And then the last thing on May, we do have some citizen petitions. The I think as Bones already mentioned, the recreational trapping ban is one of the citizen petitions we may want to hear in May. And then there's another citizen petition for Chapter W-2 allowing crossbows during archery season for big game. So we'll try to hear both of those in May. One other thing is the
Michelle?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I was talking while my mute button was on.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Just a quick question. Will those two citizen petitions that potentially could come in May, will those be heard based on the progress of the citizen petition process changes, be heard underneath the old, I'll call it rules and outcomes of the commission, or potentially underneath the new rules once we were trying to migrate to that?
Michelle, I can answer that if you'd
like. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Because they were submitted under your current rules, they'll have to be dealt with under your current rules. So the new rules that you're contemplating won't apply to those.
Thank you, Justice Commissioner Garcia, which is another reason we should try to move on the Chapter W-16 process changes at the April meeting if possible, so that we're not caught up doing this again for another petition in July and
Yeah, I agree with Commissioner Garcia about that. Strongly agree, if possible.
Are other commissioners in agreement there trying to see if there's any of these items that we're looking at May, if we can pull them to the April call? And obviously, that staff will have to look at that and see the logistics of if there's enough notice and if we can fit and what can fit and all of those kinds of things. But is that kind of a general consensus of commission? Is anything that's on May that can be pulled to April we'd like to?
Carrie Haller, I would certainly endorse that as much as we can put on April and get it done.
Commissioner Hoffman, okay. Yes, I would also agree.
Okay, thank you. So staff, I guess, get back to us on how much heartburn that provides, and we'll keep in touch. One other thing on May, that's a non-regulatory item. We don't anticipate including the statewide mountain lion plan in the May meeting agenda. It's more likely going to be either in the June or July agenda. I know that's received public comment as well. I just want to make that note. And then the last thing I wanted to note was, of course, we had a lot of interest in that forum that we had to cancel for that was going to be on March 19th. And I think, you know, that is something that we, given the fact that the whole point was to learn ways CPW can be working better or how we already are working and how we can leverage even more to help get families and kids outdoors. And given the pandemic and the stay at home, and this is probably not the right time to be having that discussion, but I do want to keep that on the middle burner, not even the back burner. So if we can figure out a way to either have that forum virtually in the fall or reschedule it for in-person in January next time everyone's on the front range, I just want to keep that down and simmer. And I will communicate with the panel, the folks that had agreed to be on the panel, and make sure that that is something we don't want to lose, but it's probably not the best time to be having that right now. Okay, so I think, Dan, I think you have some additional comments to cover, and then any other commissioners' comments, discussion, please feel free after Dan does his update.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Prenslow, I'll be
pretty brief that we could talk throughout the night on some of the things that are flying around or daily changes, but that's not my goal. Just kind of give the commission just kind of a brief overview on things. And I would encourage, sincerely, I've talked to a fair amount of you, but I would sincerely encourage you that, you know, after the phone in the next couple of days, you know, if you have further up questions, thoughts, concerns, advice, I'll take any, of course. And so just as a global view, there's been a lot of moving parts. Of course, I'll mostly talk about COVID-19 issues, as we addressed a bunch of other things. So, as you well know, and I copied you on my, email, we, closed the, front door to the visitor centers and the area offices and the regional offices. We still do allow people through the front door. We post a note in front of the offices, and so there are people behind the glass door. So we're handling 99% of the traffic via the phone or the internet, that if people have real needs or don't have a computer, we are allowing them, you know, one at a time to come in. That's pretty minimal, but it's still there. That took a lot of, that took a significant amount of pressure off our, not only our customers, because we were standing pretty deep and not been able to very effectively keep social distance, but our customer service people were taking on the chin. As you can see in my note, my shout out to them. Executive order helped, but we didn't get that for a few days after that. So the whole premise was that we could extend those passes and registrations and not force people to office. Some of that was because of the OHV, licensing, small gain, et cetera, application thing. But some of that, quite frankly, was just people had already, or kids were out of school and they would recreate and just kind of end up in offices. So anyway, that was helpful. I did that last week, and I kept my social distance, but I took a running trip. I went from the Northeast region, that's a shameless plug for Mark Leslie. I was in the Northeast region 3 times because he thought I missed him somehow, but I started in the Northeast region. I went up through Grand Junction, stopped at state parks, I stopped at the regional offices, I stopped at area offices, and I stopped at fish hatcheries, and there went on to Montrose, up and over Red Mountain, down in Durango, back through the San Luis Valley, back into Carter Springs, and stopped in those offices. And I would tell you, as a Friday or Wednesday afternoon, the state of the state, I would say, was very strong. Our customer service people were there, they're behind the door, they were handling everything, they were very upbeat, also very appreciative of the governor and DNR's and R's recommendation and the leadership team as we managed through those issues about people walking in through the door. So as you also know, though, then Wednesday started to hear about questions about, are we going to cancel turkey season? Are we going to close campgrounds? Wednesday night came in with the governor's, last week, the governor's stay at home. Thursday morning, even though it was not in the stay at home, it was in the governor's graphics about campground closures. And again, it was technically not in the executive order. But we decided at that point, came out in the graphic, we better deal with campgrounds. So between those two, there's a significant amount of closures. I'll deal with campgrounds first. We've done a couple financials on there. If we refund all the money to the end of April and just campgrounds and just parks, that's about $500,000. If we go to Memorial Day, that will be $1.3 million of lost revenue. And if we go to July 4th, it'll be $3.5 million of lost revenue. I do have Lauren and her team, thanks to a good tip we got actually from Doug Vilsack, that we're going to request whether we can delay or retain people's reservations for the next year or the next time they need it, or also ask if they're interested in donating to them. We're working through Aspira on that, and I'll get you an update when we can do that. That will come into play potentially as other things are affecting us. So it's a short, quick shot on the campground. Interestingly, no surprise, because of the things I talked about before, our day use for parks, wildlife areas, trails, et cetera, fishing, boat ramps is up. That is specifically at state parks, it's up. That's part of the governor's plan to mentally and physically be healthy and have people outside. No surprise, when you're in a pandemic, we have differences of opinion. I get lots of emails. Some people say, please don't close turkey season, fishing, or parks, because that's the only thing keeping them sane. And a second or two later, I get an email or several that say you need to, you know, be socially responsible and close everything you have. No surprise to the commission, we're a cash-funded agency, and so for everything we close, there is an effect. Yes, we have a reserve on the wildlife side. We have no significant reserve on the park side. We were at dead even prior to this, before closing campgrounds on the park side. So this isn't just about economics whatsoever. You've seen it in my writing. You continue to see it. I'm going to try and do a video tomorrow. And for all of this agency, I will tell you, we're working very hard to manage to yes, not to manage no. No is very simple. But we're managing to yes as best we can while we're keeping our staff and our customers as safe as we can be. And you can imagine there are differences of opinions on what that can be, but that's our working model as of today. Let me see what I can fill out. Turkeys, let's talk specifically about turkeys. We do have a request from a county out east to not allow turkey season. We are going to respond in the next day or two to them as a draft response on some of the nuances in that is they're concerned about people going into their grocery stores or gas stations. So we'll come back. We've got a bunch of questions about what that entails and if they want a total closure. I believe that's actually what they do want. We want to see if we can, for lack of a better term, meet them in the middle. So Mark Leslie and his staff are working with all the LT because this won't be just an issue and is not just an issue with one county. But as you do with one, others will follow. So we're working through that. I am in discussion with my boss and the governor's office about that because we're, you know, that we definitely understand that, lots of pressures at a lot of different spots as we, you know, if we close one, people have that expectation. There are closures that have gone on by county sheriff, and we did have a Route County did an order on camping, and we, at the time, did not agree with that camping order, but then about 2 days later, the whole stay-at-home thing, so that resolved itself. So I think that's enough. I'll answer any questions globally, and again, if you have specifics, love to have your phone call. Last but not least, as of today, we've made a decision to permanently suspend Partners Conference in the outdoors. That's been a very difficult decision to make. We were looking at June, but we didn't want, and we had opportunities to be in June, so if you have an opinion on that, I guess please let me know. But we pragmatically said, even though we hope and think business will be open in June, it's iffy enough, we don't want to have to bounce that twice. And the whole intent of Partners is face-to-face facilitation and discussion, and so we don't want to miss people for too early on the comeback, hopefully. So we'll endeavor to persevere for partners for next year. So unless there's questions for me, that's the quick state of the state.
Chair, this is Commissioner Hauser. I have a question. Dan, can you just share with us globally, I think I asked this question to you directly, just for our own education, sort of, you know, the commissioners are obviously getting lobbied on the Eastern Plains turkey hunt and season and closure of wildlife areas and all that, just given the pressure on that those small communities. And it sounds to me, based on your description, that really is an administrative call and or something that could be handled at the governor's level through, you know, an addended executive order, whatever protocols that is. I would just say, you know, given that the major ski resorts were literally closed down by an order, and you could make a lot of the same arguments, yes, you can socially distance, you can ski apart, you're in, you know, lots of clothes and all that kind of stuff. You know, these mountain towns where I am are, you know, they responded very quickly. They've essentially shut things down to outside visitors. A lot of that has been very consistent with the executive order. So I would say in your deliberations and conversations, the consistency and application of some of these restrictions, it would seem important. And I would just, you know, appreciate maybe responding to the sort of the protocols and sort of what comes to the commission and what doesn't. And then the second comment I would make is, as you're probably hearing, I mean, at least in Aspen and the Warren Fork Valley, the Aspen Food and Wine has been canceled. That is in the third week of June. Aspen Ideas Festival has already been canceled. Aspen Music Festival and School is canceling until, I think, July is the earliest that they're even talking about having anything happening. So just so that you know, the cascade and the activities that are happening, at least in the mountain communities as it relates to the Partners Conference, I think it's probably the right idea to put it on sort of a hard pause and then see where we are and, you know, if it can pick up at some other time in the fall or just take a pass for a year. Unfortunately, I certainly anticipate these mountain towns to continue to punt and to move things and to just cancel at least for this summer, recognizing that they hope that they can just come back with a bigger gesture next year, hopefully if we're all back to normal. So I'll just stop there and maybe you could respond to those.
Thank you, Mr. Hauser, Director Grunwald. So second one first is maybe the easier one that I do hear you, and that's why I say it was June or late September, October, if I remember, for partners, and fall is then gets, it has its own conflicting issues. So we were thinking June, and I hear you. I think we're just, even if we're open, I think a lot of people are going to be catching up. There's lots of financial issues. So I think we're more in the postponed to the next year and maybe do some kind of a side celebration or discussion. So the first one, we'll be burning some of our collective dollars with the AG's office to get some answers, but at some point I endeavor not to get out ahead of the commission and I hope vice versa. I got as I started this discussion, I at the director level got the power, the authority for lack of a better term on licenses and past extensions, but regulations are still the commission, and so there's going to be a fine line between what I can do and what the commission can do and the governor can do certain things under health and safety. And so I'll endeavor not to get out ahead of you, but I actually think licensing, whether it's turkeys or anything else, is probably, while I thought about it as you and I discussed, probably more of the commission's actually than mine. And so we're just going to keep working at that. Colorado, I don't claim to be the demographer, and I don't have any different crystal ball, but I can tell you the ski areas were the vector for Colorado. That's not good or bad, just a fact. We're a nationwide destination from around the world. And so we were fifth worst state in the country on the list for COVID-19. We closed the ski areas. in a mountain town. A week ago, we were ninth worst, and I think 3 days ago, we were 13th worst. We're absolutely going in the right direction. We went from, if you watch the governors, we went from doubling, I think it was death rate every 2 days, to doubling every 5 days, absolutely in the right direction. I'm not sure we're not better than 13th now, and so there's some bright spots in there, but we got a long way to go. And so lots of discussion about social distancing and lots of discussion about the governor encouraging people to be outside. So stay tuned.
Hey, Dan, this is Commissioner McDaniel. I'd like to ask you a couple questions on that turkey as well. With regards to the turkey season, it seems to me it would be inconsistent a little if we dealt with turkey but didn't deal with fishing. And I'm not sure there's any consensus around closing the fishing seasons here in the state of Colorado. So I don't know what your feedback is, you know, with regards to that. I think there's only one other season open right now, that's mountain lion. Such small number of those hunters. I'm not sure that's a consideration, but I'm not sure what your thoughts are about that. And then I think that there's probably more turkey hunters in the mountains than there are in Eastern Plains. So this is an issue that's more statewide, I think, than just you know, just for the Eastern Plains issue that's been brought up. And then finally, any comments about, there are folks who camp at state law libraries in the parking lot. Have we considered closing those parking lots somehow to this dispersed type camping?
Okay, multiple questions. Again, Director Trumbull, thank you, Commissioner McDaniel. We did say in our press release based on the executive order, we closed campgrounds and camping. We specifically stayed away from dispersed camping, and I don't want to get on to the legal ramifications, but we're trying to balance what might happen at occasional. So if it's a organized thing, we're saying no. Wildlife area, obviously, on the parks. The dispersed camping we try to stay away from because of our federal partners and the ramifications of that. And so if we have some, we're making sure that it's either reasonable or not creating a problem, and we're dealing with that from a Law Enforcement Procedures Act, less from a regulatory act. Fully aware that turkey season is statewide, and at least so far, although I'm not really looking to hear, quite frankly, hope not to hear from a ton more communities. The communities I've talked to, or people I've talked to, don't see turkey hunting at because you can't camp on state property that's dispersed. Forest Service, et cetera, I don't know about BLM, have closed their formal campgrounds, but they've not closed dispersed. And we don't believe, we strongly don't believe some dispersed camping and dispersed hunting and or fishing is creating significant issues for COVID-19. Matter of fact, our opinion is doing the opposite now. There are nuances to that. So we're at this point trying to deal with a specific request with Yuma County and not see that it grows. We're working on a two-stage level. First is specific to Yuma County, and secondly, we'll be coming out with some thoughts and ideas for statewide as turkey season is upon us. One of the things we're talking about is delaying the start of that until you know, we get into May, and there's several reasons for that. We've not run that trap line. But that's one of the thoughts we've had, is don't start in mid-April and wait to see what the outlook is. And the outlook might be, you know, a total closure later, or just it's warmer and we're still massively going in the right direction for issues around the state, then we can make a decision off of that.
Thank you, Dan. I mean, I think a turkey lane has a socially distant activity if you're doing it right. You don't really get hang out in groups or do things like that. And similar to that with fishing, and people being fairly, I think, responsible about that. So it'll be eagerly look forward to. I know this is a very difficult issue for you and the agency, and what we do, you know, right for here in the state. But before I end, I did want to just quickly on our agenda that. Material was provided by Brian Dreyer and so forth. The team management funds were, just wanted to make a comment, they were excellent, doing a great job on the summaries. And then I wanted to thank and commend the agency, specifically Lauren, on the communications that are going on in the last month or so. They've just been, again, excellent, just fantastic in putting information out and messages to the public. So great job by all.
This is Commissioner Garcia. I wanted to comment on that as well. You know, we can beat ourselves to death worrying about turkey licenses and everything else. But, you know, what we do know is it comes down to personal responsibility. And that's where our biggest issues have come. And the only way we can go after that animal is through education. And I applaud the work that the division has done on education, and I would ask if there's anything that we do that we not only continue that, but we strengthen that. I think that's the one thing that we are really good at, and it's, I think it's very, very helpful.
This is Director Trumbull. I tell you both thank you, and actually, again, all the commission for making this phone call, but with a large sense of pride, I would tell you thank you for the positive comments. People are a lot at home, but we still have people out in the field. We still have people behind every counter that we know of, even though the door may be locked. But we're trying to provide the best customer service we can while balancing, you know, health and safety. It's, I know Lauren's shop has gotten all kinds of accolades on social media, and quite frankly helps, you know, at certain levels within the governor's office on social distancing and how to manage on the front end. Hence that we're working hard to manage TS, because, you know, no is simple, but, it's pretty finite. And so to hear positive comments, knowing how hard people are working, this is hard and frustrating for everybody. We're a little cog in the wheel, but I can tell you we're, in some people's minds, the difference between them having anything or any ray of hope, or some semblance of normalcy. So that's not lost on us. I actually, quite frankly, very much appreciate the governor's leadership in this one. And so thank you for that.
And I'll just add, this is Michelle. I think, you know, the fact that the governor of this state, we're incredibly lucky. And some other states, like Oregon or Washington, you know, they're getting fined if they go outside. And we're very fortunate that this governor understands that mental health and vitamin D are key to the immune system, and getting outside while making sure that you're doing activities that stay steer clear of others. We're very fortunate that we have a governor that understands that the way we do it. And in the mountain communities, yeah, we are still out, whatever, cross-country skiing or snowshoeing, or in some places in very mellow terrain, backcountry skiing. And that's difficult for people in the Front Range that don't have that opportunity. You know, and I understand that there's that sense of kind of not there, and also a sense of fear that, hey, we don't want you coming up here to ski, or we don't want you coming over here to turkey hunt. And I understand there's a lot of that. You know, the best way to deal with that, it's tough to say. I know that I'll just give one example. San Juan County, and actually a few other counties, Grand County in Utah and some others, but for sure San Juan County in Colorado, where Silverton is, they did a locals only, and it's up to the sheriff. My understanding is it's up to the sheriff, to the jurisdiction, whether it's a town or a county, and the sheriff just said locals only. Everybody else get up. So, you know, that is an option as well, if each jurisdiction wants to, at least I've seen it be an option in San Juan County. I guess I shouldn't say that's an option across the state. I don't even know what the legalities are there, but just for example, I have seen that you know, because Silverton doesn't even have a hospital or, you know, urgent care or anything. So I can certainly see where they were coming from. But just, you know, just to kind of put things in a little bit of perspective, and again, to just say thank you to the agency and thank you to our governor who recognized that getting outside is important. Okay, with that, there aren't any other comments. I think technically we do require a motion to adjourn. Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Oh, I have one other thing. I'm sorry. Commissioner Garcia, with all of the talk we did about the April 30th meeting, I'm reminded that we just did 2 hours and we are looking at trying to do a lot more on April 30th. You might want to give some thought as you talk to your staff, Dan, and come back to the commissioners. But if we need more time, I think most of us are home and ready to do it. So if we need it, maybe we need to talk about it.
Yeah. I think
okay. I'm sorry. I didn't want to step on Madam Chair. So I'm sure we hear you.
Go ahead.
Yep, good.
Thanks, Commissioner Garcia. Anyone else? All right. Anyone make a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Commissioner McDaniel.
Second, Commissioner Hauser.
Great. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Ed and Betsy and Robert, I swear I was looking to the right side of the room the whole time. I was waiting for you guys to make a mark. Just so you know. Thanks everyone for joining. We'll talk at April.